I start by reading a verse from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Jagater hit hok e prabhur man danda kari kare tar hridaye shodan. This refers to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's verbal punishment, danda kari, of Vallabha Bhatta. States that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu punished Vallabha Bhatta, or anyone else who he punished, to purify his heart, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's only intention was to do good for the world. So that's the introduction to part two. Well, it's really continuing what I was speaking on the previous evening about punishment and lenience. I started off by reading from, or paraphrasing from, Mahabharata, how that applies in the material sphere, how a king may punish wrongdoers, or he may not. He may choose not to also in certain circumstances. And then it comes to the point of, well, what about devotees? How do we deal with devotees? When devotees do something wrong, should we punish them? And I'd said that, well, Srila Prabhupada, he didn't punish devotees. He would discipline them for their own benefit, but it's not the same as punishing them. So continuing that theme, there is a difference. Yudhishthira, when he spoke to Draupadi about this, he spoke that he went off the topic a little bit, and he spoke about the, apparently off the topic, because he spoke about how anger, uncontrolled anger, is very wrong. So the point is that the punishment may be given for this point, hridaye shodhan, for rectification, not out of a sense of revenge, or you feel this person did something, they did something wrong to me, now I'll do something wrong to them. That motive is not befitting an arya. Anarya jushtam aswargam, akirti karam arjun. Krishna said to Arjuna, You're not wanting to punish or engage in this fight is unbefitting you in this circumstance. So that was a major point which Yudhishthira explained to Draupadi, that we have to consider in what is most suitable in each circumstance. For the purpose is that one who is an exalted person, they should interact with others for the other person's benefit, or for the benefit of society in general. So even the punishment of capital punishment, that's not only allowed, but it is compulsory in some circumstances in Vedic culture. Just like in Singapore and Malaysia, if someone is found with more than a small quantity of heroin, that means they're selling it, it's not just for their own personal use. If they're found guilty, the magistrate has no choice but to give the death sentence. It's mandatory death sentence. Still it goes on. People take the risk because money or whatever, madness. So in Vedic culture, also the death sentence is there. But it's understood that that's a favor for the person who gets the death sentence, because he becomes, by doing so, he becomes relieved from the sinful reaction. Whereas to not punish him in that way means he would have to suffer much more. That's a different perspective. But there's no motive of revenge. A high-souled person should act with others. But even to punish an offender, you may say, well, that's not, it may not help in purifying their heart, but it may just restrain them from doing harm to others. One, in dealing with an offender, one has to consider not only the individual, but others also, just like the benefit of the whole society. Just like that question often comes up, should we, well, it doesn't often come up nowadays, but in the days when we used to have many devotees staying in the ashram, who should we allow to stay? We may say, well, let this person stay. They're not really qualified, but if they stay, then they can get devotee association and become better. But then the question may come, well, they don't follow the rules properly. There's minimum qualification for staying in the ashram, and they're not showing any sign of improving, so they're causing more disturbance than, and so better they don't stay for the benefit of the others in the ashram who are serious. So we have to consider not only the individual who is the possible subject of punishment or discipline, but also the others also, because if he's done something wrong, that means he's affecting others. So punishment or discipline can be for the sake of purifying others and for the sake of restraining wrongdoers or offenders. That's also for the benefit of others. Some people are just not good. That we find in Gita, and Krishna says that dvobhuto sargo loke smin daiva asura evacha. There are two kinds of people in the world. Some are godly and some are ungodly. So the ungodly, they require to be checked. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's process is to purify them. But as Srila Prabhupada indicated also, that Jiva Goswami uses that word, achikitsya. Some people, they're incorrigible. And Srila Prabhupada also indicated that in Varnashram society, the kings have to be strict. Similarly, anyone in any situation of authority, they have to exercise some strictness, as has already been discussed. Srila Prabhupada himself, Harishauri Prabhu, related that he was discussing with Srila Prabhupada about some very difficult situation the devotees were going through. Actually, due to not following Prabhupada's order, they collected lots of money, and Prabhupada said they should don't. Prabhupada repeatedly said, "Don't keep lots of money in the bank; use it all for Krishna." Then the police came and took it all because and said it had been collected by illegal means. So, anyway, that's another whole thing. So, Harishauri Prabhu, when he was discussing why Krishna allowed this, Prabhupada said that Krishna does not punish his devotees. It's not exactly punishment. So Harishauri Prabhu also commented in this regard that Krishna's pure devotee, he also doesn't punish. It's not exactly punishment. We don't punish devotees. But there is the motive of rectification. And if they're not willing to take it, then what can we do? If someone's not willing to take the rectification, then it means they're not very sincere. What can you do? It's not being in charge or having some administrative role or disciplinary role. Administrative role means disciplinary role. Whether one is a guru or a father or mother or teacher or temple president, any authoritative position means that discipline is required there also. But some are more formal and some less so. So the President of the United States thinks that he has the duty to bomb a bunch of people on the other side of the world. To punish them or to smash them or whatever. But devotees don't deal with it. I'm not commenting here on American foreign policy. I'm just using it as an example. But among devotees, devotional service is a voluntary process. So we don't have the right, either legally or even informally, to punish people with any, in any severe way, in terms of beating them or killing them, certainly not. But some discipline may be required. And if persons are not willing to submit themselves to the discipline, then Srila Prabhupada said, then they can come. They can come and join the kirtan, but those who are going to be initiated, they have to be ready to accept the discipline, because that's the meaning, disciple discipline. In Sanskrit, shishya shashan. So those who are to be initiated, they must be ready to follow all the rules. They shouldn't be. We say there's no punishment for devotees. Actually, there should be no need, because devotees, they voluntarily submit themselves to this process of Krishna consciousness. It seems almost bizarre that someone can agree to give up meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex, and chant 16 rounds a day and still have other motives, or still not be serious. At least for people raised, most people raised in the Western culture, and which means most of the Indians growing up in England today also, I think, many of them are, well, not as much as others, but they may be also inclined to eat meat and drink alcohol and so many things, illicit sex, and they're in the Western world. So to give up these things, of course, many Westerners nowadays, they're also raised as vegetarians. But to give up all these things and to take initiation is a very grave step. And then to not be serious and not want to accept further discipline for further improvement doesn't make any sense. There shouldn't really be any need to give any serious disciplinary measure to devotees. But we find, as I gave the examples in the last session, that even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the devotees with him, even they, some of them had serious problems. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't just leave it and say, well, everything, all love, peace and everything, but he could be quite strong. That Vajradapi Kautorani, Kusumadapi Komal, that's described about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That description is that verse of which I'm only remembering the first two lines, and I'm not sure if I remember them properly, from Uttaram Charit, describing the character of Ramachandra Bhagavan. It said that great personalities, they can be hard like a thunderbolt or soft like a lotus flower. So that was also said in the about the personality of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had to deal with a devotee who was supposed to be serving him. He was actually serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, an intimate association with him. There was only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Kala Krishnadas, but Kala Krishnadas fell down. Excuse me, just a second here. Kala Krishnadas actually ran away from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to join what Srila Prabhupada called some gypsies, which some low-class people. And for the sake of illicit sex, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected him. So we find, I mean, realistically speaking, we find in our execution of the Krishna, being in the Krishna consciousness movement, we find devotees or pseudo-devotees, some who sometimes steal. There was someone in South London who was, he wasn't stealing from the temple, he was stealing from his cooking the books. He was an accountant and he had to go to prison for that. But we find that there. Recently I was in one center and the town president told me they're having so much trouble because some of the devotees there, they've been there for many years and everyone says they're very good, but actually they're stealing all the time. But they have this profile of being pure devotees, so it's very difficult for him to do anything about it. I've faced this situation myself during my days as temple president, that certain so-called devotees that they're very expert in stealing all kinds of things and not getting caught, but I wasn't allowed to throw them out by the GBC guru because it's the moment he would arrive, they would be completely perfect angels, and the moment he left, they would be back to their old tricks. So eventually I just threw them out anyway, for which I was severely reprimanded by the GBC and guru, but one of the best things I ever did. What do you do? You're not supposed, Brahmins are not supposed to be punished. Well, I also have some radical views on that, because I don't think that just so because someone has a thread put on their shoulder that they're a Brahmin. If you see a bird and it waddles like a duck, swims like a duck, and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And you can call it a Brahmin if you like. So if someone's a thief and a liar and a cheat, they may have a thread on their shoulder, but they're not a Brahmin. So, but Brahmins, and they're not supposed to be punished. According to Shastra, and especially devotees, are not meant to be. Krishna Bhagavan says that api chet sudara charo bhajate mam ananya bhak sadhur eva samantavya. Such a person, if someone is my devotee, Krishna says, ananya bhak, his only object is to worship me, such a person is saintly. That's very important. It's not, Krishna doesn't say that anyone who says Hare Krishna once is saintly, but he says ananya bhak, one who is totally dedicated to me, if they sometimes have a problem. And then the next verse, kshipram bhavati dharmatma, he quickly becomes fully righteous. So a repeat offender we can't consider to be properly a devotee. So all these things have to be considered. It's all very well to say love, peace, and embrace everyone and this and that, but when you're trying to administer a center and increase the preaching, then we have to be more realistic. Just like Arjuna was trying to be a hippie on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and say that, well, let's just love everyone and embrace them and forgive them. And Krishna said, you're a damn fool. Get out and kill them. That's what you're supposed to do. So we don't get out and kill them, but we're not hippies. And we don't misapply. Krishna says that one who, sudurachari, someone who is performing most abominable activities, they can still be considered, they're still to be considered saintly if their motive is to worship me only. Bilva Mangal Thakur was actually a sudurachari, and is most badly behaved, inasmuch as he was regularly visiting a prostitute. But then, taking inspiration from her, he said, okay, now I'm stopping this, I'm going to go to Vrindavan. And he left everything. But on the way, he became again attracted. So that's an example of someone who's completely dedicated his life to Krishna, but then due to bad habit, he becomes again attracted to sinful activities. But he's not, but we recount that story, and that's all part of remembering him, what a great devotee he is, because he overcame that. We don't say, well, he was a woman hunter, and then he was on the way to Vrindavan, and again he was woman hunting, and so that all the bhakti he did, it was all false. No, it wasn't false. He's a great devotee. But if someone, in the name of being a devotee, makes a regular habit of seducing women, then such a person cannot be considered a saintly person. He's a rascal. That's all. So anyone who has rendered service or seriously and favorably to the Lord, his failings can be dealt with in the spirit of rectification rather than retribution. But at the same time, it may be that someone is desirous to perform service and be in the association of devotees, but if they're not able to control their mind and senses to the extent that they are a serious disturbance among the society of devotees, then we have to deal with them accordingly. Both in the secular world and among devotees, wrongdoers, if we don't rectify that, then we send a message that anyone can do whatever they like. Just like what is that saying? That bad wood drives away good. What is it? Bad something drives away good. What is that saying? Oh, there's another saying. One bad apple spoils the whole barrel. So, if we allow, in the name of peace, love, and tolerance, for instance, a thief to remain in a place, and we just let them go on, then people who actually want to be good and honest, they won't want to stay. They'll go away. And more thieves will come and say, hey, you can get away with it over there. Let's come. Or others who are neither very committed to honesty nor inclined to be a thief, then by bad association they may also become. I've seen in... It's actually quite a widespread phenomenon that I've seen, that some people come to this movement in with all good intentions, and then they see in some places, and I'm not specifically referring to England. I don't know what goes on in England much because I don't spend much time here and I don't get involved in all the ins and outs of what's going on, so I'm not commenting on the situation here in particular. But some people come and they come with good intentions, and then they see that in the name of devotional service, certain leaders are lining their own pockets, and they say, well, there's no the pure devotional service that they were attracted to. They don't see it, and they see that others, and they become like that also. So not to rectify a situation, A stitch in time saves nine is another saying, because once you get a whole syndrome of cheating and lying and stealing in the name of devotional service, it's very difficult to rectify it. And there are centers which are going on like that for years. And people, naturally the devotional spirit isn't strong. So where's the devotion if in the name of bhakti people... They're making collections, and there was one major center of our movement where the temple president told me that all the preachers, which is in India, preacher is a euphemism, if you want, for collector. That when they tried to tighten up and get receipts for all the donations received, there was a major revolt. They don't want to give receipts because cash donations are given to Krishna's devotees, namely their wife and children. They steal it. That's all. So it's understood that whatever donations they bring in, with receipts, with checks and all that, but that goes to the temple, and they take their commission also. But they don't bring cash donations. Cash donations go in the pocket. So once you get a syndrome like that, it's very difficult to stop it. So stitch in time saves nine. Try to clean up. Okay, and then And in that same center, I remember one town president came in. He was very unpopular because he really seriously tried to clean up the place. Actually, there were two of them, one after the other. But the syndrome continued because there were so many there who were, they were, it's like some gang or something. So these kind of things are going on. So, yeah, in such cases we should punish, but then we can also see that someone who has bad intentions, they can change also. That's also possible. Jagai Madhai, they were changed. But on the other hand, we don't bring people in and give them residence in the ashram and give them positions of responsibility until we see that their heart is changed. We should be very careful who we appoint to various positions. What should we do? Report to the police? In some cases, there may be a need to do that. However, generally, Srila Prabhupada wasn't very... he didn't want to do that. Because one reason... Well, especially with devotees who had done... There was a case where one GBC and sannyasi fell down and it was reported that he'd taken a lot of money with him. And when Srila Prabhupada was asked if the police should be called and he should be prosecuted, Prabhupada said yes, if the accusation is actually true. But then Prabhupada said, no, after all, he's our man, he's done a lot of good service and shouldn't be prosecuted. And later on it was found out that the accusation wasn't true anyway. But the thought that he'd done a lot of good service and then he'd become overwhelmed by Maya and then he took some money, but... Srila Prabhupada didn't want to punish him in that way. Although if it had been a new person, then maybe he would have done. Another thing is if we call the police, then it's bad publicity also. It may be. If people think that, well, within this movement there are thieves and rogues and this and that. That has to be considered also. Because the bad activities of one individual can affect the reputation of the whole society of devotees. But in some cases, the law should be invoked. Again, one has to be an expert in considering time, place, and circumstance. Lenience, we're talking about punishment and lenience. So lenience means to, all right, don't punish, give them another chance, give them another chance, give them another chance. Srila Prabhupada several times said, I'll quote from one lecture, that you give one chance, two chances, not more. Krishna is not, in one lecture, Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna is not such a fool that you simply once surrender to him and then commit sinful activities, again surrender to him. No, that will not be allowed. Krishna can excuse you once or twice. Generally, Srila Prabhupada said, once, twice, and then after that. Means they're not very sincere. If they go on again and again. In discussion of the Apichet Sudara Charo, is someone willfully, if they're really... It's the difference between contemplated crime and not contemplated. Even in the law, there's a different judgment. If someone, in anger, without thinking about it, kills someone, that's not considered as, in many countries, including this country, I believe, that's not considered as serious a crime as if someone premeditatedly murders. They plan it all out. So if someone willfully, we commit sinful activities, willfully, planning it out, thinking about it, then And that's worse. That's more. You can wait some more minutes, I think, because probably the session will go on somewhat long. You wait up till 9 o'clock. One of my godbrothers, I remember, he came in London. He wanted to join, but he had this. He was 40 at the time. He wanted to join the ashram. He had a smoking habit. So he said, okay, I'll give it up. In those days, anyone wanted to join? Okay, come on, join. Get shave up. But he had this habit of vanishing outside the door from time to time and coming back in with a tobacco smell from his mouth. But eventually he overcame it. It took a few months, actually. But eventually he controlled it to a large extent, but then maybe once or twice a day. And it took him a long time before, a few months before he could completely stop. But he did. It was initiated by Srila Prabhupada. He came actually very offensively, blaspheming the devotees. And then Prabhu Vishnu, Brahmachari, at the time he was the town president, just stop! And he just shocked him, and he was very heavy with him, and then he changed. On the spot conversion. Sometimes devotees might think that, well, someone's not behaving properly, and we don't want to call the police, we'll just beat them up, something like that. And I know many, I don't know about now so much, but sometimes devotees used to do that. But that's very risky. I know there's one case in Mayapur, they just went really, they found someone stealing, and this was many years ago. And they beat the person so badly, he almost died. So, if he had, literally almost, if he had died, it would have been already the public at the time was very much against us. And you don't know what to do. He might bring all his caste members. He was a shoe thief, actually. So he could bring his whole village and attack the temple. He could nurture a grudge for life. And so the punishment, if at all there's to be something like punishment, it should be commensurate to the crime. Not that someone steals. Well, a professional shoe thief is horrible. They're at temples, common in temples in India. Here, do you get them also? Yeah? Some. Yeah. So, they require to be punished. Usually in India, they're turned over to the police. And at least I know the police just thrash them and then let them go. Because it's too much to make a court case against them and this and that. That's what they do. But let the police do the thrashing and have a good system for keeping the shoes so they don't get stolen. That's even better. Prevention is better than cure, isn't it? But anyway, While we're trying to prevent, the criminal is trying to get around the prevention and do their job also. So there will be crimes, crime and punishment. Traditional punishments for brahmanas, if brahmana does something wrong. For instance, if a brahmana is found drinking alcohol, that is considered extremely sinful. We'll find in the Bhagavatam also, brahmana who drinks alcohol, how he has to suffer by drinking hot lead. We sometimes hear in ISKCON a big uproar because some sannyasi fell down or something like this. But any brahmana who falls down, who drinks some alcohol or so, That's also extremely serious. We don't take this Brahmin initiation seriously enough. You think of a sannyas, if Grihastha falls down, doesn't matter so much. If a sannyasi falls down, that's very bad. Well, that's true, but if he's supposed to be a Brahmin and falls down, it's also extremely, I mean, it should be considered something extremely serious. So, various things, of course, there are all kinds of things they can do wrong. Some things are considered worse than others. Illicit sex is very bad. General misbehavior, not performing his, maybe he has a service to worship the Lord, doesn't turn up, doesn't come on time, doesn't do it very well. So a punishment could be withdrawing the service, at least for some time, to see if they will improve. And then also, if it's known that someone's a Brahmin but he's not behaving properly, then it's people will also stop relating to him as a Brahmin. They won't give the respect. They won't give the. They may not give the aita. A Brahmana is. He lives by people give him alms. So that's stated in Shastra. You should try to find a good, pious Brahmana. So if you find this person's a Brahmana, but he's not really behaving properly, then people won't want to give him anything. So that's a consideration also. In extreme cases, he could be ostracized from the whole society of Brahmana. Now you're not a Brahmin, get out. Or from any, whatever caste one may be in, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or Jati. If someone is expelled from their Jati, means they may be barbers or weavers or whatever, farmers. If they're expelled from their Jati, then they have nowhere to go. Then they have to become a Chandal, and they have to, they're finished, they're socially finished. That's the worst thing that one could do. Or one can be expelled for some time and then readmitted. The person has to do some atonement and be readmitted. So, if a devotee who has performed genuine service commits a grave offense, he may be temporarily or even permanently stop from performing certain services. For those who have committed child abuse in ISKCON, they're not allowed to, at least for, they're given some time, they're not allowed to worship the deity, lead kirtan, give classes. But usually when the term's over, then no one, it goes on and on forever because no one wants to give them that opportunity. Some of they may be just excommunicated from the Society of Devotees. That's happened also. That some, well, there were two cases of very senior devotees. They were actually expelled from the whole movement. So these are kinds of very serious offenses. One thing we used to do, I'm talking about my memories of ISKCON in England in the 1970s. If someone was found to be seriously misbehaving, a male devotee would shave off their shika and throw them out. That's considered a great punishment in Vedic society, to shave off your shika. Nowadays it's difficult to get anyone to have a shika. Please don't put the books on the floor. Punish them. Shave off their shika. But that also, that signifies you're not one of us anymore. It's like throwing them out. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was very tolerant, actually. He was very, in his preaching, he was like a lion. Acharya Kesari, an acharya just like a lion. But in his personal dealings with people who came to live in the mud, he was very tolerant. And even with thieves from the mud, he could be very tolerant. And especially someone from the Brahmana caste, he was, as was the general sentiment in India at that time. Someone, they may be a born Brahmana, they, even if they don't act like a Brahmana, one should be very tolerant toward them. And we find that in the Bhagavatam also with Ashvatthama, that he should have been killed for his crime of what he did was so horrible. He was practically the worst villain of the whole Kurukshetra war. Because after the war it was practically over, all the remaining members of the Pandava forces, he killed them all in their sleep, slaughtered them all mercilessly. With the power, the destructive power of Lord Shiva entered him and he killed them all. So he was captured by Arjuna, and Arjuna was supposed to kill him, and Bhima said, okay, kill him, and Draupadi said, no, don't kill him. He's not acting as a Brahmana, but he is son of a Brahmana, and he's the son of your guru, our guru. So some tolerance was given to him. And there's a discussion that Srila Prabhupada says that Draupadi was soft-hearted as a woman and she wanted to excuse him, but Srila Prabhupada said that that's actually not very good for an administrator. He shouldn't be sentimental like a woman. He has to be strong and punish. So some compromise was reached. He was punished, but not by taking his life, but by humiliating him, as Krishna did also with Rukmi, who was his new brother-in-law, but whom Rukmi came to try to kill Krishna, and Krishna humiliated him, and Balaram came along and said, well, that's not very good, and later Balaram himself killed Rukmi for similar offense. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was... he was mild in treatment. In Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, I've recorded some instances. One hired cook for big festivals, they would hire Brahmin cooks. He was found stealing cans of oil. Oh, that's a common thing that hired cooks do. Because they're big cans of oil and they may steal them. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, when he was found out doing that, he gave him, okay, you take the can of oil and go. Don't come back. Like that. So he's very mild like that in some cases. There's an instance also in the book, Srila Prabhupada, A Friend to All, by Mula Prakriti Devi Dasi. It's described that some boys who were stealing money from the Radha Damodar temple in Vrindavan when Srila Prabhupada was living there, Srila Prabhupada would call them, give them prasad. They're stealing some money, probably from the box or whatever. Of course, they're living in Vrindavan, and there are quite a few people, residents of Vrindavan, who, if they were not living in the holy place and born there, they would say they're complete rascals. But we don't say they're complete rascals because they are born there and live there. But the way they live and act and talk is from the conventional point of view quite uncivilized. But that consideration is there. After all, they're residents of the Dham. So, anyone who's sincerely surrendering to the process that Srila Prabhupada gave can be tolerated and forgiven. Tolerance is required if we want to punish everyone for everything they do wrong. Who will punish? As Jesus said, what is that? He said, who has not done any sin? There was a case of someone was to be stoned to death. I believe it was an adulteress. And Jesus said, well, he who has never done any wrong, let them throw the first stone. And then no one could throw the stone. Jesus himself would be the only one who could do that, but he wasn't going to. But there are sincere, and there are those who have hidden motives, or due to their very fallen condition, they're not able to follow the process. They may be like that also. We see sometimes someone may join the temple and they want to do well, but they have some drug habit or something like that, and they're not enough in control of their mind and senses that they can actually surrender to the process properly. It may be due to their mental condition, the way they've grown up, and we're seeing this in the present generation, that they're not able to submit to any authority. And so, because of their conditioning is so strong that they can't advance in devotional service, because in devotional service you have to submit to some authority. So again, it's what's the conclusion? We often think, okay, give the conclusion, but you have to see each individual case. That's why there are law courts, because they have to see each individual case. Even after the judgment is given, to what is the punishment given, or maybe they'll be excused or given some suspended sentence, something like this. So you have to see in each individual case. But we should also see that so much damage was done in ISKCON in the name of mercy, giving another chance. One major mistake was made, which has caused extreme, terrible damage to ISKCON. It's when there was a case of someone who'd, temple president, had constructed a very big temple, and then he said this property is not under ISKCON Bombay, it's under some other society, this and that. And the lawyer, consulted a lawyer, he said, remove him immediately. But there was some sannyasi, he said, no, he's done good, serve him, give him another chance. It's a major mistake. Should have followed the lawyer's advice and removed him. And the problem has got worse and worse and worse, and it's going on to the present, it won't stop. Maybe he would have continued anyway, but it was a major mistake. In the name of being merciful. Of course, it's easy to say in hindsight. Everyone becomes wise too late. Closing the barn door when the cow has already gone outside. But we have to see also that so much damage was done to ISKCON in the name of mercy and accommodating and being kind, misplaced kindness. If we all just forgive and tolerate in this way, then Bhagavad Gita would have never been spoken. And if Krishna just said, oh, Arjuna, you've become a pacifist. How wonderful. But Krishna didn't say that. He told him, you're a damn fool. I'm quoting Srila Prabhupada here. It's not my words. Bhagavad Gita would have been finished after the first chapter. There would have been no Bhagavad Gita. So in devotional service also, we have to see, there has to be discipline. We can invite everyone to come, everyone's welcome to come join the kirtan, but there has to be some kind of discipline maintained also. And if we just want to increase the numbers just by not imposing any discipline, just come, do kirtan, do whatever you like, they won't advance properly. Because advancement, what does advancement mean? To surrender. Surrender means you have to do some things which you may not like to do, but we do it because we want to advance in Krishna consciousness. So we give devotees service, They have to be prepared to not just coming and taking prasad and doing kirtan, coming whenever they like. No, 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 you want to be serious? Okay, there's your service. You have to do this, 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 and this. And, well, I don't do that. Well, sorry, but we have a system here, and if you want to be part of our group and come forward and get initiated and all these things, you have to be prepared to accept some discipline and take some instructions, which especially it seems in the modern age, people don't want to do that. They don't want to submit to anyone. So if we say, well, anyway, they don't want to follow, anyway, bring them in and let them do whatever they like, however they like, whenever they like, at whatever level they like, then you're going to create a whole syndrome of very neophyte devotees and who are not very serious, and they'll create a whole atmosphere like that. And then it becomes impossible to organize anything properly because no one wants to, everyone just wants to do whatever they like. And any new people who come, you can't, even if they're serious, you can't train them because there's not an atmosphere like that. And you'll actually get supposed devotees telling those who want to be serious, don't be so serious, relax. I mean, I'm not just talking theoretically here. This is actually, I have experience of this because I try to train my disciples to be very serious and strict in their practices, and then others will say, "Then come on, you don't have to. You have to follow all that." And it becomes more. They'll actually tell them that it's not right to do this. You shouldn't. You shouldn't push yourself too much. You shouldn't just relax, take it easy, be happy. They're also. Strictness is required, but the strictness should be like that of a father with love, not just... I've seen also centers where the leaders, they're strict and everyone does everyone what they're supposed to do. They get up early in the morning, they do all their services, but they're not happy because the strictness is more... than the love or the effect. It's just strictness with no affection. Rules and regulations, but no affection. And if anyone does anything small thing, rah, rah, you nonsense, rascal, fool, spaced out. Sometimes you may have to chastise someone like that, but if it becomes the norm, then new people who come, they become like that also. And I at one time in our movement, the whole... practically throughout the world, the atmosphere was very much like that. And it became quite uncomfortable, actually. On the other hand, if we're just all nice, and then everything just goes to hell in the name of being so-called nice. And then you get things like, now it's quite common in the Western world, among karmis, that men and women, they meet each other and they embrace each other, just as a kind of friendship or something like that. Have you seen that? And I see our devotees, that's crazy. And man and woman embracing each other. And they're supposed to be, they're initiated devotees. And they're doing it, they're just following the karmic habit. It's completely mad. But they think, well, it's showing affection and just complete nonsense. So if we're nice, but we don't know how to be nice, that's practically worse. It's like Niyamagraha means the two meanings of the word Niyamagraha, which is one of the six factors that can completely destroy one's devotional service. One is being too strict in following the rules. Actually, there's no such thing as too strict, but being strict in the sense that just taking the rules for the sake of the rules without seeing how people are actually advancing. But on the other hand, if we don't follow any rules, then we don't make any advancement. And the whole atmosphere then it becomes like a social club. And then you get all sahajiyas, like in Bengal, they don't follow anything. No rule. In fact, they take pleasure in breaking all the rules. So following the rules is better than not following the rules, but all has to be administered with some affection also. Superficial affection, on also not political affection. It means you show you're nice to someone because you want to get something out of them, something like that. So really, to follow the path of dharma, and especially bhakti, which is the ultimate level of dharma, it actually requires that we become spiritually advanced. We can talk all theoretically about punishment and tolerance and all these things, but nothing works unless we're actually fixed in serving Krishna. So it requires advanced devotees to understand and implement all these things. Are there any questions? Okay, Hare Krishna. So, what's the question? Yeah, I do remember that, yeah.
Well, I've lived there for 20 years on and off.
Do you still have that house there?
That's the thing. The owner, Mr. Pandy, who's got a Mustang oil shop at the Krishnamurti Temple, came to me and gave me some concocted story about police harassment and the foreigner there, so long. It was all Jude story. Literally, he gave me the money back and took the keys and kicked me out. And said I could use one room whenever I come to Vrindavan. And he's actually cheated me. He's sold the house to someone else for 5-10 lakhs. I only paid 1,750,000 for this house. How do I react? Do I become angry? Do I forgive him? Do I try to make a revenge by sleeping outside his shop and telling him he's a cheater? So this is very...
Practical consideration. It's, as I said, I believe in the last lecture, that usually you have to hear two sides of the story to get the whole story. There's usually one, from one side you only see one thing. But in Vrindavan, generally dealing with Western devotees, dealing with the locals, they've got you over a barrel, as the saying goes. The Westerner is always wrong.
Yeah, I went to see Padma Lochan Goswami. He said, take the money back, you're going to get the money back. Otherwise we'll kick you out and you won't get the money. But I feel very resentful for this because I've been 20 years.
What can you do? Srila Prabhupada, he was kicked out of the Jhansi land. He got the land, he was using it, and he was kicked out. He just moved on. Yeah. Looks like you're moving toward the end of your life, so... So better just put all in this life. So many people have cheated us and so many things. Yes. Just put it behind you, and whatever situation you're in, get absorbed in hearing and chanting. That's probably better. Otherwise, you get involved and you'll have to carry that on to another life and come back again. So he can be a cat and you'll be a dog or something like that. Something like that.
Yeah, he told me the police would put him in jail if I didn't leave the house.
Yeah, but that's, as I said in the lecture, that many people we find in that part of the world, even though it's a whole... If they weren't Brajbasis, we'd call them rascals.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon. But then we find... Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I believe he's commenting on the Krishna says to Arjuna, Kaunte apratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. He says, Arjuna, you declare it that my devotee will never be vanquished. And Vishwanath Chakravarti says that you have to say it, Arjuna, because they'll believe you. They won't believe me. No one trusts people from Mathura. Anything else? Yes, please.
I'd like to make my question in the form of a statement. I listened to two of your lectures, and I thank you, Maharishi, for gracing us with your huge amount of effort into a subject. I think that we provoke some very good thoughts for me as far as this particular society. And that is that what I've learned from you is that the discipline only creates balance for the society to function well and expand. And that love isn't, like you said before, free and easy, and people are not very happy with that, and it's very true that it's empty. This is not an empty direction. Love is actually a very powerful energy. And that's what I was thinking, is that there's the dealing with very human conditions, with all the opposites, the way people behave, and the way they fall down, and how do we discipline a god?
Discipline a god?
Yeah, well, somebody who's not a god, but somebody who's a devotee, high standing. And I read somewhere once, they said they have this problem. What you do is that, well, speak to the elder god. And the elder god said, I'll think about it. And he thought about it. He said, I know what I'll do. And he spoke to the naughty young copy god who thought he couldn't be punished because he was a god. And he said, well, you can't punish me. And he said, yes, I thought about it. And I thought you would be the one to meet out your own punishment. So it's a statement of, can you rely on somebody who's learning to practice to become something?
Become?
To become a pure person.
Yeah. Knowledge. That's also then you get into a very big discussion. People are raised to high positions, but then they're not fit for it and they fall down. It's been a major problem in our society. But I don't think I want to get into it. I have discussed this on many occasions, but I don't think I'm going to get into it now because it's a major topic. I have a few lectures on my website on topics like this, if you want to seek them out, discussing such points.
I've got two questions. The first one is, it's a rather personal one, so I don't know whether I should be asking, but I'll ask anyway, it's in my mind. Every time when we see a Maharaj come to this temple, all the neophyte devotees, like myself, we like to serve the Maharaj, and the tendency is to try and get some kind of personal service. So, you know, give them a massage, particularly the feet. The most preferred. But what kind of service do the Maharajis prefer? You know, what's their preference?
What kind of services do the Maharajis prefer?
Yeah.
Well, everyone's different, so. In the case of Srila Prabhupada, so many devotees wanted to do personal service for him. But how much personal service can one person accept? If you have 200 people cooking for you, then you can't eat all they're going to cook. If you have 200 people all wanting to massage your feet, it becomes a disturbance. Srila Prabhupada said, all services are my personal service, and that's a more advanced way of seeing it, that actually, especially the book distribution, you do what he actually wants and is pleasing, pushing on the mission. You may not even see him that much, but pleasing a person doesn't necessarily... You see, we have this idea that pleasing them means pleasing their senses, but in the case of a spiritually advanced person, it means serving Krishna's mission. Yeah, what's the other question?
The second question is a bit more tricky. We had a conversation yesterday with one, again, neophyte devotee. So a neophyte devotee is having a conversation with a neophyte devotee. And we were trying to explain that Krishna is the source of Vishnu, but he wouldn't have it. He wouldn't have it, and we said, you know, the revelation of this fact is, and we even showed him the verse out of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he just said, oh, not that book, not out of that one, out of the Vishnu Purana. Is there any way that we can try and convince?
If someone is convinced that Vishnu is supreme and they don't want to accept the evidence of Bhagavatam over Vishnu Purana, then what are you going to do? There's no point to go on and on and on, and they'll just say no, no, no. Just leave it at that. Let them worship Vishnu.
Then do we say, yeah?
No, we'll say this is the evidence of Bhagavatam. If you want, you can take it. If you don't, you don't. That's all. You can't force someone to change their mind. If they don't accept the evidence of Bhagavatam, then you can get into a whole big discussion of how Bhagavatam is there. But they've already made up their mind, so what? Why then you're a neophyte for trying to argue with someone who's not listening? They're worshipping Vishnu, very good. They're in a much better position than most other people in the world. So, Hare Krishna, anything else? Otherwise, we'll finish here. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Hare.